Genevieve, good to have you on Eye on the Arts.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Last time we talked, I was filling in for Dave Dixon, and we were talking about art. So I thought, well, I better get you back to talk, because we talked more about the symbology of your thesis and your work, and we're going to touch on that. But I want to talk about ancient art.
Perfect. Well, it's my favorite topic, so I'm all into it.
Oh, good. Okay. Let's start with the cave art.
Okay.
That was kind of the basis of your thesis, and you've been kind of a media darling ever since we talked last.
I know, it's been incredible. I'm tired and excited all at once, so yes, it's been great.
Just kind of before we get into the discussion of the art, tell me who else you've been talking to.
Well, it's been absolutely incredible. There was sort of the initial rush of, you know, sort of newspaper style, like the smaller articles, and then we had an amazing one come out in the Vancouver Sun that was a full page one, which was just fantastic. And then the really cool stuff has been all the different European countries. Italy, one of their biggest newspapers, La Stampa, did a full page science supplemental on me. In Spain, there's an article coming out in El Mundo. The Czech Republic, I'm not going to try and pronounce their newspaper, but it's a really big one, and they did a science full-page article, which is beautiful. Poland, Germany, Switzerland. And they keep rolling. Like, things keep appearing out of other things. Like, now there's an Italian archaeology magazine that's going to do an interview with me. So, yeah, now we're getting into some, and I've been meeting as well. This was one of the side effects I hoped for. I've been meeting some amazing scholars as well. So including in places like the Czech Republic, where I'd really like to work in the future. And now one of the experts in the Czech Republic has been put in touch with me through this article, and we're now conversing. So it's kind of like talking to a rock star in the discipline. It's kind of exciting.
But you'd have to, you know, if you did that, you'd have to learn how to pronounce their publication.
I probably would, yes. Yeah. But he's very lovely, and he speaks English, and I apologize profusely for not speaking Czech. And he said, it's a small country. It's okay. We don't expect you to. It's a tough language.
So lots of media attention to your research, and
absolutely.
But it all started here on CFAX.
I know. This was literally the starting point. It's incredible. So
cool.
It's nice to be back, though. I enjoyed this.
Well, it's good to have you back. And
thanks.
You heard it here first. Let's talk about the art.
Absolutely.
Enough of that media coverage stuff.
Yes, enough of that. Yes,
back to the real subject, the art. What we talked about was the cave art.
Yes.
When last we talked. And we talked more about the symbols that might indicate a language, or at least a pre-language.
Yeah.
That's just one little facet of what appears on those cave walls.
Absolutely. Well, basically, there's cave art all over the world. I'm going to talk more specifically probably about European cave art, just because it's what I know the best.
Right.
But I don't want to, you know, diss cave art there's in North America, Australia, Africa, there's a bit, all that kind of stuff. The stuff in Europe, though, has probably been the most studied as well. Like in Spain, there's probably at least 150 sites that are dated. And again, I guess date range is important. So between about 35,000 and 10,000 years is what we're talking about. That's the period of time in which they were doing it. So that's before now. And in France, there's about 170 sites. Now, the cave art is really interesting in Europe, actually, in the sense that there's a huge number of animals. 60% of all the animals are either horse or bison, which is even more interesting. Across all periods, all regions, it's all about the horse and bison.
Hmm.
They appear everywhere. You've got mammoth, you've got reindeer, you've got regular deer, you've got ibex. So a huge variety of animals. So animal imagery is very important, and it's probably the area that's been studied the most as well, is the animal imagery, which is where when I came in looking at the geometric signs that are found in the same sites, it just hadn't had as much coverage because, I mean, some of these paintings are just magnificent. Like, we're talking 5 feet long, we're talking multiple colors, we're talking the fact that the art almost seems, like a horse almost seems to be jumping out of the wall at you. Like, their ability to do sort of perspective and almost three-dimensionality, like, they use the cave walls as the canvas in a way that makes the art even more impressive. Or, like, sort of the hump on a bison will be done on a hump on the rock so that it really does have a really neat perspective with shadows and that. So you've got the animal imagery, you've got the geometric signs, which is what I studied, and there's actually more geometric signs than animals, but of course they're smaller, they're less visually impacting, if you will, obviously, than all these beautiful animals. And then we have a smaller category of human sort of imagery. Again, there's not really faces. I think there's two faces. Out of 20,000 years, we have two faces. So I'm not kidding. Other than that, it's just kind of the blank, right? And more emphasis is often put on the body and that kind of thing. What's really interesting as well, so we've got animals, humans, and geometric signs.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the landscape? That's, they always talk about that. You know, what's not there? Where is the landscape? There's no trees. There's no sun, moon, stars that we can find. We've never found anything that looks really like that. So it's almost interesting what they chose not to put in there, too, is almost as interesting as what's there.
Well, okay, several questions
Absolutely.
Leaping to mind. Number one, the fact that no faces, except
yeah.
for those two.
Yeah.
My first thought was, okay, faces are hard
yeah,
to draw.
Fair enough.
But by the same token, yeah. you're talking about animals leaping out of
yeah.
Out of cave walls. So
yep.
these were obviously sophisticated artists.
Oh, yeah. We're talking like, you know, the mane's drawn. You know, we've got a beautiful mane that almost looks like it's flowing in the wind. We've got ears and eyes. And, I mean, the animals, some of them even almost have, like, breath coming out of their mouths. Like, incredible detail on some of the imagery. But, yeah, the humans are a very interesting category just because of, again, they're so simplistic that a lot of times they're almost more like an outline.
Really?
And so, yeah, except for the two. And the two are kind of funny. One of them is almost like a caricature, really. It's actually, it looks almost exaggerated in the way it's done.
A cartoon.
Yeah, almost okay. a little bit. Yeah, a little caricature-like, yeah.
Prehistoric comic book.
I know. We kind of wonder. That's, you know, it really makes you wonder, though, is, you know, when rock art in other parts of the world, like in Africa and in Australia, there's a lot more humans. Humans are a huge factor. You've got humans with, like, shields and spears. You've got humans in dances and groups. Way more humans everywhere, and yet it's definitely a small category when it comes to the European art.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So why do you think that landscape and stars and celestial bodies were ignored?
I don't know. You see, it's such an interesting question. There's different theories as to what it could be. Obviously, again, it's so hard to really know, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Well, one of the big theories has been that, you know, what was the purpose of the art, right? Because, I mean, obviously, granted, it's gorgeous, it's beautiful, it's amazing to go see. I highly recommend anybody to go if they're somewhere. There are still caves that are open to the public in France and in Spain. Mm. But what was the real meaning? I mean, that's what everybody's trying to get at, right? Why did they do this? And one of the theories that seems to keep cropping up and that seems to have almost in a way it's grounded as well in the present to a degree is shamanism. And the idea that if there was some sort of hunting magic involved, or if it was a focus on, again, trying to ensure the hunt. Because, I mean, you're in a very cold, very hostile environment where there's months of the year where it would probably be quite difficult to get food. So having availability of food, making sure your hunts are successful, would have probably been rather an important factor to them. And so there's been thought that maybe what they were trying to do was somehow capture the spirit of the animal they were going to go kill beforehand, or that they were trying to coordinate almost with the spirits, if you will, of, you know, something to do with hunting. And so that maybe hunting magic played a large part in that. And so if that was the purpose of the art, rather than them, you know, wanting to do landscapes or thinking of it as more as an aesthetic. So if there was some practical reason why they were choosing to do it, it might make sense that they remained focused on the things that were most important to them for the reason. So yeah, if it's art with a purpose, as opposed to art for the sake of art, okay. then you might see things only being chosen if they were relevant to the reason why they were doing it.
Which would account for horses and bison.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And mammoth when they're available.
Yeah.
So, because sure. mammoth okay. only were sort of show up when the ice sheets are in the right kind of positioning. It depends where they're located. Whereas like in modern day, there's been a lot of what's called an ethnography sort of work done where they, modern anthropologists have spent time with hunter-gatherer groups that still exist around the world and have talked to them about, well, because a lot of them still do rock art. It's actually a living practice for them. You know, they've asked them, so why do you do this? And often it does seem to associate with shamanism or with hunting magic. And the other side of shamanism would be the idea of, you know, say having animal guides, which could also explain the animal focus. So some sort of intervention with sort of the supernatural, if you will. And so there's that kind of aspect as well. So, yeah, that's where that's often been described. But honestly, we don't really have a true answer. How's that?
Yeah. Well, I didn't expect you to know for sure, but I figured there was probably a theory or
yeah,
two.
Yeah, and that's probably been the one that's recurred the most and that people seem to keep pulling evidence for that does, again, with modern day knowing. I mean, obviously, the cultures have evolved over 20,000 years, but seeing that common feature all over the world,
right.
that often hunter-gatherers still have a focus on the hunt being an incredibly important part of their lives.
Yeah. No kidding. Now, before we begin the official interview,
okay.
you were mentioning the other art besides the cave art that existed at that time or was being created.
Yeah.
Tell me about some of that.
Well, the interesting thing is, I mean, art, obviously, even modern art, we have all so many forms, right? We have paintings, we have sculpture, we have, you know, music and all these things which would sort of fit into that category of creativity. Mm-hmm. And that's generally how it's described during this period. So sort of the Ice Age period is sort of described as the creative explosion, right? Because we do have a few examples before 40,000 of, you know, beads that were found or ochre crayons that look like they may have been used for drawing or in some way had some sort of non-utilitarian reason to use them. But as one archaeologist described it, you could take all the finds before 40,000 and stick them on a single table. And that would cover the entire planet. You go to a site post 40,000, especially say post 35,000, and the amount of finds from a single site would go on the same table. So we have these tiny glimmers beforehand, and then this just is, it is almost an explosion, really, of all this evidence. And so along with the art that's done on the walls or the ceilings of caves, we also have a huge amount of figurines that are, some of them are just beautifully sculptured. And there was an incredible find really recently in Germany of a 35,000-year-old ivory sculpture that is gorgeous. They're not like your typical, you know, somebody's kind of scraping away at them. Some of them are just so intricate. There's another one that's one of the really intriguing finds. 32,000 years ago, we have, it's a half human, half lion. 32,000, it's got the head of a lion, the body of a human. The head of the lion is done with a great amount of detail. It's actually quite big, because a lot of the figurines are quite small. We're talking maybe 10, 15 centimeters. Like, they're little pocket ones. It's interesting.
Yeah.
But this one's actually more like 30 centimeters, so it's actually taller. And it's a really fun one. I love it when I go into, like, school classes, because I do a lot of that, where I go in to actually talk to the kids in the classes about the art. I always show them that, because it's the head of the lion, the body of the human. I mean, what does that make you think of, right? Things like in Egypt, where their gods are half human, half animal. And so, again, we don't know what's going on, but very intriguing when it comes to sort of these early examples of figurines. Of course, we also actually have musical instruments. How unbelievable is that? Some of them date back to almost 40,000 years ago, and they're flutes.
Yeah. Okay.
And they're using, like, because, of course, bird bones are hollow.
Mm-hmm.
So what they've done is they've punched out holes in these bird bones. And, of course, archaeologists like to experiment. So we actually have, I've heard the recording of a concert that was done in the present using a Paleolithic flute. And they were actually able to mimic, I mean, they're pretty simplistic. There's about four or five holes on them. But they were able to mimic, actually, can't remember. I think they were trying to do a concerto. Like, it was really quite impressive that they were able to make beautiful music off of this incredibly old flute. So that they had all sorts of musical things going on as well. We've got figurines, which are this sort of very sculpture-oriented thing. We also have the other thing that's usually included in the art is also the burials. The burials from the Ice Age are magnificent. You know, humans are one of the only sort of hominid species that buries their dead. Neanderthals did as well, so I've got to give them credit for that, because that is one of the most interesting things about the Neanderthal. They didn't do art, but they buried their dead. Mm. And sometimes they even put some what you could almost call grave goods in with them. Like, they sprinkled red ochre over the grave, or they included a couple tools, or almost maybe a food offering. Like, there's been examples of, like, small mammal bones found in with that as well. So very intriguing in its own right. But really, it's the modern humans where it starts to just blow your mind. There's a site in Russia called Sungir, where we have two different burials. One's a single adult male. He's probably, I think he's about 50 or so. And he has 3,500 ivory beads that were carefully carved, and that we think they were attached to his clothing. That's what it appears, is that they're located on his clothing. The important thing to know is that each one of those ivory beads, they did, of course, modern experiments again.
Yes.
To see how long does it take to carve a bead once you're good at it. So it took about a year of practice for the researchers to actually get quick enough at it that they felt, okay, we're kind of replicating what they were able to do. It takes an hour per bead.
Wow.
Do the math on that. He had, I think, close to 3,500 on his burial. So we've got him. But the one I love, because I'm so curious. I just wonder, why would they do this? It's a double burial of two children. They're buried head-to-head. There appears to be somewhere around a 12-year-old boy and about an 8, 9-year-old girl. So they're buried head-to-head, facing upwards. The girl has 5,500 beads. The boy has 4,500. And they have these intricately carved little, they almost look like pinwheels or something that are actually carved out of ivory into these wheel shapes. So if you think about it, The girls got 5,500 hours worth of work.
Yeah.
The boys got 4,500 hours worth of work. And it's such an interesting question because, you know, it really speaks to the idea of social hierarchy, too. This would have taken a village. This is not, you know, some sad parents or an individual for the older man who, like his wife or, you know, some relatives decided to get together. This is a major endeavor. I mean, this would have taken a village almost a year really to do. And so it makes you wonder, what did those people mean to them?
Mm-hmm.
And why was this sort of burial so important? It was really fun. I actually showed that image to some of the kids, one of the classes I was in, because I figured, hey, they're kids, you know, burial, sort of their age. And I asked them, so why do you think they would have done that? Why do you think the kids actually got better treatment than the adult? And, you know, of course, they had all these wonderful theories about maybe they saved them from a saber-toothed tiger or something, and they died in the attempt, but, you know, then they were honored. And so I didn't have the heart to tell them it could have also been some sort of sacrifice, but we won't go there.
Yeah, good point. Interesting point. But it, also interesting that the girl had more beads than the boy.
Yeah. As well as the pretty pinwheel ornaments as well, which were all really intricately carved. So, I mean, there's that going on. And then, of course, I mean, mentioned the village of Dolne Vestinici. Did you know at 25,000 years ago, we have a settled village? It's in the Czech Republic. It actually has, like, they had huts laid out where we still have the structure of it. This was a permanent village. We think of them as being nomadic.
Yeah.
But even cooler, do you know what they were doing there? They were firing clay. They had kilns. You know, I mean, that is mind-blowing. Normally, we don't think of clay being fired until the agricultural period. So almost 15,000 years later is when we first see it appearing, and we kind of assumed, well, maybe it has to do with, you know, holding grains or doing something. 15,000 years earlier, these guys are firing clay in large quantities. They actually had a building that was their clay-producing place. Mm-hmm. And but they weren't firing useful things. They were firing figurines, horses, bears, humans, and they were burying them under the corners of their houses.
Which leads back to shamanism and another.
Yeah, and what were they doing? Yeah. So it just, it's the whole, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, it's such an incredibly sophisticated period when it comes to, I mean, humans were just experimenting when it comes to art and creativity in so many ways that we've never, you don't see it before then. It's just suddenly starts happening. And it's just so intriguing because really the skills that they were developing there are literally the foundation for everything that we have now. I mean, if you think about even, you know, doing a computer science degree, you have to do a course in symbolic logic. Well, hello, we can tell you where symbolic logic comes from. It's coming from the Ice Age, right? So, you know, it's the largest transition probably that humans have ever been through is, you know, moving away from just doing sort of the utilitarian tools or things like that to this real invention and creativity. I mean, even the handles of their tools are intricately decorated with like running horses and all sorts of amazing things. So suddenly this huge explosion, really.
Yeah. You mentioned the symbols.
Yes.
And that was what first brought us together.
Yes.
But so I just wanted to touch on it again for anybody who missed the first.
Yeah, absolutely.
The first interview, first time around. Just basically recap for me. Okay. For us, how you came upon these symbols and the possibility of their meaning.
Absolutely. Well, it's, you know, it's a funny story because I originally saw them when I took April Knoll. She was my master's advisor, and she's now about to be my PhD advisor. I took her class as an undergrad, which is called Paleolithic Art. And, of course, she was showing all the beautiful imagery with the horses and the bison and the mammoth. Mm-hmm. And all around them were all these little geometric signs that look like, you know, tic-tac-toe grids or triangles, spirals, zigzags, all these interesting little shapes that they have, circles, et cetera, et cetera. And so I wanted to do it as a term paper because I actually thought they were quite intriguing, especially when, you know, I found out that there's double them than there is the animals. So I'm like, well, whoa, this isn't just sort of occasionally happening. There's thousands of these things. And when I went and asked her and said, you know, I'd like to, I'm really interested, you know, are they using the same signs everywhere? Are they, you know, across time, do we see the same signs being used? How about across a big space? You know, what's going on with them? And she'd said to me at that point that, you know, well, it's not really been done. And so we kind of laughed and said it would make an excellent master's thesis, which is how I went and did it. Basically, I didn't really know whether it was going to work. I decided to use a database because I figured that let's get everything into one spot. And of course, you know, the power of a database just allows you to do so many amazing things because you can ask it all sorts of questions
sure.
and pop a really fast answer. So I compiled 146 sites from France. I chose France just because, I mean, you have to keep it reasonable for a master's. I speak good French. And the French had put a lot of money into their C14, like their carbon-14 data.
Oh, yes.
So we had a lot of good real dates to anchor off of rather than guesses, which is also important. So I just sort of asked three general questions, which was, you know, do we see the same signs being used across 20,000 years of time? Do we see the same signs being used across the entire region of France? And then my third question was, the sort of the general theory has always been that the art and especially like the signs started off simply at around 30,000 years, and that it was only over the next 10, 15,000 years that the use of them became more complex, more varied, more sophisticated, if you will. So that was my my third question. Is that true? Are we seeing it going from simple to complex? The short answers are yes, we see the signs being used for 20,000 years, and it's a small, limited group. There's only 26 so far.
Okay.
Yeah. The question of across the whole space of France, and the answer is yes. We are seeing the same signs moving across the landscape in a way that's really interesting. I don't know if it's the people moving or if it's a cultural thing and maybe they're sharing the signs, but we're certainly seeing the signs used in the same spots. And the third question being simple to complex, the answer is no. At 30,000 years, we already have 70% of the signs being used. So there's 19 signs already being used at 30,000 years ago. So when you've got a system that's that well established at 30,000 years, then you start asking, well, where the heck did it come from? You know, because you're assuming that if you were seeing the very birth of this behavior, that there would be more experimentation. You would see more variety. You'd see more attempts or things that maybe they were using and then it kind of fell out of popularity. And then you see this really core group of signs that are being used again and again and again. And a lot of those ones remain in use for 20,000 years. So really, it was a fascinating sort of first step. The next step, of course, is we need to get rid of the boundaries of France, which didn't exist at 30,000 years ago. And so that's what I'm doing for my PhD, is I'm going to expand to look at Spain. I'm going to be looking at Italy because there's some very intriguing sites along the Italian coast. Thanks to, again, some of this media publicity, I've been having a wonderful chance getting in touch with everyone. And I actually have an invitation now to go to Russia and go look at the rock art sites in Russia. How cool is that?
Very cool.
Yes. And again, other Eastern European countries. So in the Czech Republic, Slovakia, I've been hearing about. Like, I knew they were out there, but it's not something that's really been published a lot. And suddenly I have these awesome colleagues who are completely willing to open up their findings to me and allow me to come. So that's when things are going to get interesting, is let's look at the big picture and let's see what's going on.
The big picture.
It's my favorite thing.
Yeah. I guess as an anthropologist, the big picture is what you're doing.
Absolutely, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I still can't get over the fact that there are 26 symbols, 26 letters in the alphabet.
I know it's so inconvenient.
I know it's coincidental.
It's totally coincidental. Yes. I think the best way to describe the signs, because, I mean, of course, one of the big questions I keep getting asked is, you know, so is it writing? What are they saying? And I'm like, I have no idea, first of all. The answer is no. We don't have grammar. We don't have sentence structure. We don't have the things that you really need to officially call it a writing system. I think what we have here is probably almost the best word to describe it is like an ideogram. That's the word that's used in linguistics often to describe, like, say, some of the early Chinese characters and that kind of thing, that they're almost a self-contained idea.
Okay.
Like one abstract symbol equals one concept, one idea. And that often, again, they're things that are difficult to portray in a way that you like, you know, it's not like a horse where you can see a horse out the door of the cave, you can see a horse on the wall. Again, the horse might have a whole lot of other meaning to do with spirituality or anything else, but a horse is a horse. You're able to go, perfect, I'm going to represent this that way. So, whereas with the signs, we don't really know what they meant, but obviously, you know, that was a big question. Is there meaning? And I can say indirectly, yes, that the fact that they continue to use that same small group of them for such a long period of time without a lot of variation at all, like there's hardly any even new inventions, like they were constantly using the same ones, really speaks to the fact that they obviously had meaning or they wouldn't have kept producing the same ones for 20,000 years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. No wonder you're so excited about this. It's fascinating stuff.
It's awesome. There's like this whole the possibilities are just so endless. Like I'm standing right at the beginning here of so much exciting research. It's like my whole career lies in front of me and there's just so many things to do that I don't even know where to start, right? So, no, it's going to be fantastic.
Well, I appreciate you taking some time again to come in and talk to us about it and update us on your travels and your travails. And I'm still fascinated about the musical instruments, too.
I know. So, yeah, no, I'm sure there's more coming out, like, all the time. Every year they're finding more things. So
Bach Concerto for Bird Bone.
Can you imagine? Thank you so much for having me on your show.